Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Fiction. Science fiction. Horror. Fantasy. Crime. LGBT. Thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCB 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
Joining us is Robert Stinnett, author of Day of Deceit. He was an American sailor, has 10 battle stars, and his book has been very interesting to me and a lot of people. So how are you doing today, Robert?
Well, I'm looking forward to our interview.
Fantastic. So now tell people a little bit about you if they don't know who you are, and what your a little bit of your history.
Yes, I joined the Navy in December 1st, 1942, and was assigned to the USS San Jacinto, which was a light aircraft carrier of the Pacific Fleet. And we were part of the main task force that was attacking the Japanese Imperial Navy. And one of our officers was an ensign by the name of George Bush. And he was the photographic officer of the squadron, torpedo squadron of the San Jacinto. And as you can guess, as George H.W. Bush eventually became president of the United States, but I knew him first as a photographic officer of the of his torpedo squadron. So we both learned aerial photography and used it against the Japanese Navy in World War II.
Wow. That's quite a history. Did you get to know him very well back then?
Oh, yes. He was very dedicated. He was a pilot, but he was also in charge of aerial photography from his torpedo bomber. So he would come back to the photo lab on the San Jacinto, and we would discuss the targets for each day, a landing beach at Peleliu or at Saipan, that sort of thing, and how the photography would be accomplished. And it was a lot of fun. He's always making jokes, and there was no officer put down to us photographers.
Wow, that's great. Did you ever think he'd become president?
Oh, I had no idea. But I liked him so much, I took a lot of photographs of him. And most of the photographs of him I took that were used later in his campaigns.
Wow, That's quite an interesting history there. So what brought you into writing the book, Day of Deceit? Like, how did you get to there?
Well, I was, of course, very interested in the attack on Pearl Harbor. It was used by President Roosevelt as a means to get us into the war in 1941. But so I was reading all sorts of books and military books that were put out by authors, generally from the East Coast and from the Ivy League universities and so forth. But in 1982, I read a book by David Prang called At Dawn We Slept. And in it, he had a throwaway line, just about less than a paragraph, that the Navy had a intercept station or a monitor station that was listening to the Japanese Imperial Navy radio broadcast. Well, that was the first I'd heard of that. Because it was top secret. We were not discussing it aboard the San Jacinto. And so I wanted to find out more about the monitor station, because if we were listening into the Japanese orders to their fleet, Pearl Harbor could not have been a secret attack. And so I worked at the time on the Oakland Tribune. I thought that this monitor station, if it existed, would be maybe a good December 7th, 1982 story for Pearl Harbor. And I went to my editor and told him about it. He said, oh, by all means, go over to Hawaii and see if that's true. So I filed a FOIA, that's a Freedom of Information Act, with the Navy, asking to see the station. They granted it to me, believe it or not. And so I went over there, and with my wife, we met some of the radio operators that were guides at the Pearl Harbor facility at Pearl Harbor around the USS Arizona. So that's where I met the cryptographers that were listening to the messages, and they told me where I would find more information. So that sent me on a survey to the National Archives. I'm still using, I'm in my 23rd year on it now.
Wow. Now, being a sailor and being in the Navy and doing all this, how was your feeling toward FDR at the time? I mean, before you knew any of this, like, did you think he was a good president? Everything was well.
Oh yes, I supported. In fact, he was the first president I voted for in 1944. But prior to that, I was a great admirer of him, and he was trying to get us to establish aircraft carriers and fleet units that could be used to fight Germany. And so I was quite aware of the isolation movement in this country that did not want to get involved in Europe's war. That's what that was called. And so I was sort of a news junkie and a teenager at the time, and I would listen to Edward R. Murrow and Hans Kaltenborn, to NBC and CBS radio networks, reporting what was going on in Germany.
Yeah. So it was really tough to get a lot of information back then. Like, it wasn't as easy as it is now, was it? It was...
Well, of course, it was all secret, what was going on. And by what was secret was the how to get... do away with the isolation movement in this country and get the United States to fight Germany again as a World War II. Because in World War I, we made a lot of loans to European countries we sent our troops over there. They were gassed by the Germans in the battlefields of Europe, and Americans wanted nothing to do again with another world war, and that was the situation that the president faced in the late 1930s and early 1940s. So he was trying to use deceit to get us into the war with Germany by getting Japan to attack us. And Japan was using deceit to hide all of this. So it was deceit versus deceit. And the U.S. Navy found out all about this because we were monitoring the Japanese naval radio network, which extended all throughout the Pacific Basin. And we had monitor stations from San Diego north to Seattle in your area to Dutch Harbor and then down in the China coast and into the Philippines. We had Japan wired for sound. But they also had us sort of wired because they had a Japanese spy. He was a naval officer hidden in the Japanese consulate in Hawaii, who arrived in March 1941 and began spying on the Pacific Fleet. At first, he was reporting a census of the fleet, what kind of warships were there, like carriers, battleships, and so forth. And that took us to the spring of 1941. And then in the late summer of 41, he started preparing bomb plots of the Pearl Harbor anchorage where these warships were anchored, and sending it back on RCA radio communications in Honolulu. Well, we were listening to all these messages, and the FBI was alerted to it. They assigned agents to follow them. But this is all kept secret, part of the deceit. So Japan is using deceit to learn about the Pacific Fleet, and we're trying to get them to attack us. And that's what happened about 14 months before Pearl Harbor, when President Roosevelt summoned the commander of the fleet to the White House and the Oval Office and told him about this plan. And the admiral just blew up at the president, and it was a hot and heated conversation, if you could call it that. You don't talk to the president like Admiral Richardson did. He was in charge of the United States fleet. In October 1940, we did not have a two-ocean ocean navy. And so Admiral Richardson opposed Roosevelt when Roosevelt proposed getting Japan to attack us at Pearl Harbor and then trigger a treaty with Germany, Italy, and Japan, the one that would come to one another's aid. This is a backdoor approach to get us into the war with Germany. They're the ones that Roosevelt feared, not really Japan. So he adopted a plan by the Navy to get Japan to commit an overt act of war against the United States.
So what was the general feeling about Japan in the United States at the time, like before Pearl Harbor, in the general public? Did they have any real opinion about the Japanese?
Well, no. In my high school, we had Japanese students in the class. We were all very friendly, and we loved all the students. But Roosevelt saw this opportunity when Japan signed the Tripartite Pact with Germany and Italy in September 1940. And the Tripartite Pact said that these were the Axis nations. If one was attacked by another nation not in the war at the time, meaning the United States, then the others would come to their aid. So Roosevelt adopted a Navy plan, seizing on this deal that they would come to one another's aid. And that's why he adopted the Navy plan. There were eight provocations to provoke Japan to attack us at Pearl Harbor, and he adopted all eight of them starting in October 1940. And we were following from our monitor stations. One of the major stations was there in Seattle on Bainbridge Island called Station Sugar. Sugar was 4S for Seattle.
Oh. So, well, what was his plan then? So he wanted... So what did he do to provoke Japan then?
Well, he adopted the Navy plan by a lieutenant commander who was head of the Far Eastern Desk of the United States Navy. He was stationed at Maine Navy in Washington, D.C. And he came up with this plan, this overt act of war plan, to provoke Japan into attacking us at Pearl Harbor, which he said would cause them to react in a hostile way. His name is Commander Arthur McCollum, and he was a son of Baptist ministry parents who lived in Japan and were teaching Baptist Christian theories to Japanese. And Commander McCollum learned the Japanese language. He was born in Japan. And so he learned that and was able to speak and learn their culture. And so he came up with the idea after he grew up and then returned to the United States, getting Japan to commit the overt acts of war and suggested aid to provocation to President Roosevelt. One of them was to keep the fleet at Pearl Harbor. Roosevelt had moved the fleet to Pearl Harbor in the spring of 1941 over the objections of Admiral Richardson's. And then that was one of provocation. Another one was to send an American task force into Japanese territorial waters to tick off the Japanese nationalists that were objected to that. Other was to keep supplying China, which was then within a civil war type with Japan. Another was to have institute oil embargoes and steel embargoes against Japan. But that was just to show Japan got all the oil they wanted. They sent their tankers to the refineries in San Francisco Bay, and this is in October and throughout the fall of 1940 and the spring of 1941. So these eight provocations, and I have them in my book so your listeners can read it and then judge for themselves. They were provocations A through H. There was eight of them.
Right. And so do you think that, so with him doing this plan, did he think it was going to be as devastating as it was? Did he think he'd lose as many people?
Yes. Commander McCollum, you know, he really knew the Japanese psychology. And he was playing up to that so that they would be outraged and commit this overt act of war at Pearl Harbor. And here we are in the United States. We're listening to the spy who's been infiltrated into the Japanese consulate, and he's sending these messages back to Japan over RCA radio communications, which there was a station in Honolulu, a receiving station and a transmission station. So we knew what they were doing. And we were also listening into the Japanese radio frequencies themselves. So we knew that they were organizing tankers and aircraft carriers So there was no question about Japan was biting on the overt act of war plan.
And so his ultimate goal was Germany, FDR. What was he so bent against Germany for?
Well, Germany was, of course, in October 1940, Germany had conquered most of Europe and was bombing London and England and massing invasion forces on the French coast so that they could conquer Britain. And then Hitler had been successful in doing that, then he was going to come over here, seize Bermuda, Canada, British possessions in the Caribbean, and that would have been a huge burden for the United States, because we did not have a blue ocean navy in October 1940 when all this was going on.
Right, but the public wasn't behind it; they didn't see that.
Well, the public was led by Charles Lindbergh, who was called the America First Committee, and Henry Ford, and the Hearst newspapers, and Father Coughlin. This is the group that wanted nothing to do with another World War One, because America parents did not want to send their children to another Europe's war and go through what they did in 1914 to 1918. And so they did not want to get into a war with Germany, who had the wherewithal for munitions and the skill to create bombs, electronic bombs, and that sort of thing. But we wanted nothing to do with the Europe's war, and there were meetings held throughout the United States where Lindbergh spoke against that. And 80% of Americans wanted nothing to do with the war, according to Gallup poll. So Roosevelt adopted this first, the overt act of war plan by McCollum that would get us, that would unite us from a Japanese attack, because Americans would be so outraged by an attack at Pearl Harbor that they would join in the Allied movement to defeat Germany. So that's what it was all about. And it's sort of complicated, but it was really very simple. And Roosevelt was successful in getting Japan to attack us. And using deceit, and Japan is also using deceit. So that's an interesting thing, that we were able to penetrate their deceit, because we were listening to their actual broadcasts from Tokyo, and it's intercepted by the station. One of the stations, as I said, was at on Bainbridge Island there in Seattle.
Wow. And so the general public didn't really have a good idea of what the Nazis were about then, before the Pearl Harbor?
Oh, yes. We knew that Hitler had invaded Austria and in other parts of Czechoslovakia, and it also had worked. Hitler and the Nazi Navy had worked with the Spanish Navy in the Spanish Civil War. So we knew the radio frequencies used by the Japanese, the German Navy in the Spanish War, because they were helping General Franco, and they had their battleships there, and we were listening to them. And one of the ones who was listening was Commander McCollum, who was an officer of a destroyer. And he had radio cryptographers aboard his ships that were listening to the German radio frequencies, so we knew their communications procedures.
And so after the Pearl Harbor bombing, there's a lot of, you know, young listeners, and they probably don't realize a lot of things. So the government, American government, did what to the Japanese? They actually put them in camps.
Well, to hide the fact that we were listening to the lone Japanese spy. There was only one Japanese spy, and his name was Yoshikawa. He was an ensign, and he was the one that sending the messages. But to cover up our knowledge of all this, Roosevelt sent the order to put 120,000.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now, imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Americans of Japanese ancestry into concentration camps. And that was ordered in February 1942. And in the meantime, the Japanese consulate in Honolulu was taken into protective custody and sent to a dude ranch in Arizona in luxury conditions to hide the consulate and the spy from American newspaper men. So they lived in the dune ranch where 120,000 Americans lost all their property and were sent to concentration camps in California, Arizona, and other parts of the West.
So now what do you think the people's reaction, like how has it changed you toward how you feel about FDR?
Well, I had no idea all of this was going on. And first I got into it in my high school, the Japanese students all of a sudden disappeared. And we never were told what had happened. In the meantime, I'm a news junkie. I'm listening to Edward R. Murrow and Calvin Bourne on the CBS and NBC networks, and I understood what was happening, the bombing of England and London and what they were going through and the sinking of our ships in the Atlantic. This is in October in 1940. There were, and into 1941, prior to Pearl Harbor, German submarines were sinking our ships, and cargo ships and warships. So I was aware of that. So was Americans. And I was for going against Germany at the time. I was only, what, about 17 years old, but I could see what was going on there. And also listening to what Edward R. Murrow said and Kaltenborn, they were both warning about what Hitler was going to do, and pointing out that invasion forces were being amassed by the German army on the French coast, which was just 35 miles from England at the time.
So how soon do you think, ahead of time, that FDR actually knew they were going to bomb Pearl Harbor? Like, how much notice did he have?
Well, he adopted the plan on October 8th, 1940. And he was getting daily intercepts. These are the Japanese intercepts from the Navy cryptographers, as I said earlier, from Station Sugar and others there in the Pacific Basin. And then eventually, when the spy arrived in March 1941, he was getting his messages, so he knew that the spy was planning bomb plots of Pearl Harbor. He was getting all this information, and he sent David Sarnoff, who was head of RCA, to Pearl Harbor and to instruct the RCA office at Pearl Harbor to be sure they gave all the messages that were intercepted to the Navy commanders and the Army commanders at Pearl Harbor. And that was done. So they all knew that we were listening to that, but they were told by President Roosevelt's orders to stand aside and let Japan commit the first overt act. And that was order went out on November 27th, 1941, just about 2 weeks before Pearl Harbor. That was all intercepted.
So you think people would feel different about the president, FDR, now about knowing this?
Oh, well, we didn't know about it. This is all secret. During the war, you wouldn't talk about it. And then when the war was over, all of these records were put in Navy concrete vaults in Crane, Indiana, in a arsenal there, which had concrete protection. And it's called Crane, Indiana, or Crane Files. So that's where I learned about the Crane Files, when I went over to look at the station described in the book by Gordon Prang. And it was called Station Hypo. That was the name we had of our listening post in Hawaii. And then, as I said, there was also the other listening post on the Pacific Coast, including Station Sugar in Seattle.
So now,
but this was all kept secret. And then after the war, it was all hidden in Crane, Indiana. But I was told by the cryptographers that I met at Station Hypo when I went over there for the 1982 inspection. And I was the first newsman to get, the first alive newsman to get into Station Hypo. I had learned that the Japanese radio station and television network had been there in August 1982, about a month before my, and they learned all about it.
Wow. So what was your reaction?
I was told about this, but I had no proof, and so I returned to Oakland, California, to the Oakland Tribune, and we had a story about this station, but I did not have any of the intercepts, so I started filing FOIAs with the Navy, and they granted me permission to do all this. It was strange, but I figured out these were new ensigns and lieutenants, junior officers that did not know about the secrets of the overactive war plan. And so even Jimmy Carter, President Carter, in 1979 released a huge batch of these intercepts to the public and National Archives. Well, I learned about that and filed and got those records. And there were about 2,000 intercepts. These are the actual intercepts as Japan was preparing for war against the United States. We were intercepting about 1,000 messages per day at Station Ipo. So, and we started in July 1941 to December 6th. So we had about 140,000 intercepts that were in our files. But Jimmy Carter only released 2,000 of them. That was about 2% of the 140,000. But anyway, these were the very important intercepts, and I saw them. They were translated into English, and so I could. So then I filed. I wanted to meet these cryptographers. And so I filed FOIAs with the Navy, and they let me interview them, though I had to submit their answers to them. But the Navy cleared them all, and one of them was the traffic chief, the man in charge of the whole intercept facility for the Pacific Fleet. His name is Homer Kistner, and he lived in my state down in Southern California, and I spent about 3 or 4 years interviewing him, all with the approval of the Navy. But you know, there's about 3,700 Pearl Harbor books currently in print, according to Amazon.com. And I'm the only one author to actually talk to the intercept operators, and including their boss, Homer Kistner, who was the traffic chief. And I think that's inexcusable for the American news media not to have gotten their first-hand accounts. I got all the information and the actual intercepts. But the Beltway correspondents in Washington, D.C., apparently were protecting the reputation of President Roosevelt. In a way, I was exposing this, but it was the only alternative that President Roosevelt had to get us into the war and prevent Japan and Germany joining forces and then coming over and getting bases in Bermuda and Canada and the Philippines to attack our country. That's what Roosevelt was really after.
You did a lot of research for The Day of Deceit. How long did it take you to get that book all researched and put together?
Well, I'm still researching. I spent 18 years when The Day of Deceit was published in December 1999. Now I'm working on, I've got more records showing President Roosevelt's actual written approval of all of this. That'll be in my next book. I don't want to talk about that right now.
Okay. When do you?
I'm still researching that.
Oh yeah, I know it takes time. When do you plan to think you'll have that out?
Well, I'm working with publishers and my literary agents for December 2016. So I hope I can do that.
Wow. Yeah, it'll be very interesting. Look forward to it. Why do the other book writers or media not really cover this subject?
Well, that's a big thing. I mean they gave me a scoop by remaining silent and They don't even mention Japan, and the we had 25 monitor stations in the Pacific that were listening and reporting to President Roosevelt. I thought that was very important for the American public to know. Not during the wartime, of course, but after the peacetime. I think that the 3,700 authors should have it. And also, motion picture scenarios, Torah, and documentaries, they also ignored all this. They could have interviewed them. I made television interviews with Commander Kistner, and I have those where he was telling how they were monitoring the Japanese carrier fleet when they were in the North Pacific. And on December 6th, Commander Kistner wrote a warning to Admiral Kimmel, the head of the Pacific Fleet, saying that Japan is on a wartime basis. And the alert went to Admiral Kimmel, but he had received, 2 weeks earlier, he had received the order from President Roosevelt to stand aside and let Japan commit the first overt act. And that's what happened. You know, Admiral Kimmel on November 23rd had the entire Pacific Fleet in exact location in the North Pacific where Japan was going to launch Pearl Harbor. It was above, it was called the Bukovia Seamount. As you know, the Pacific is just a ring of fire, and north of Oahu and in the Hawaiian Islands, there are these seamounts that were once above sea level, but they slowly sink, and the new islands come up in the Pacific. That's happening now in Hawaii, in the Big Island, in Kilauea, where the volcano is building a new island, where islands that we participated in World War II, like Tarawa, is slowly sinking, and they're going to be seamounts in another 1,000 years or so. If you follow what I'm saying here.
Yeah, yeah. What's your overall opinion now? Now that you know everything, it's all past. Was it the right thing for FDR to do?
I think that was his only option. If he had done nothing, and nothing to get us into the war with Germany, and Germany was able to invade England and seize Bermuda and establish bases in Canada and the Caribbean, we'd have been toast because we did not. Our two ocean navy didn't come into existence until late November 1943, and so Germany had a substantial navy, and Japan had a huge navy with aircraft carriers. And Japan and Germany had a huge submarine force that could really hurt us badly if we had not gone into the war. So I say that even though the Americans were opposed to joining the war, Roosevelt had to face a third term. He ran for a third term in the fall of 1940, and promised Americans that your boys are not going to be sent into any war unless we are attacked. That was his coda there, that unless we are attacked. So in October 1940, that's when he started getting Japan to form a carrier task force that would attack us at Pearl Harbor. And we followed all of their plans for monitoring the Japanese naval communications. Now, the Japanese naval communications are different than the Japanese Foreign Office code. We also had broken that one, but we admitted to that, but we never admitted to breaking the Japanese naval code.
With all
until my book has come out, and I've got the actual intercepts.
Yeah, it's a great book. Of all the experience you have and the years you've lived and the things you've seen and read, is there any books or movies out there that you think people should see besides your own?
Well, as I say, there's 3,700 books currently in print, according to Amazon.com.
Right.
And none of them talk about breaking the Japanese naval code and the orders going out to the fleet to stand aside and let Japan commit the first overt act. That came direct from President Roosevelt on November 27th and 28th, 1941. Same order went to General Short, who was head of the Army troops in the Hawaiian Islands, and General MacArthur in the Philippines, and Admiral Hart, who was head of the Asiatic Fleet. So both the Pacific commanders, both in the Philippines and Hawaii, were told to stand aside and let Japan commit the first overt act. Because this is all secret. They're not going to, President Roosevelt was not going to let the public know about this. And the Washington Beltway reporters, after this knockdown, drag out fight that the president had with Admiral Richardson on October 1940, he had a press conference right immediately after the knockdown, drag out fight, and the reporters asked the president, "What were you and the admiral talking about?" And and Roosevelt answered them, saying, "Oh, we were just discussing maps of the Pacific." And of course, they laughed at that, but they did not pursue that.
Well, so how do people get a hold of you, or they get your book? Your book's in Amazon, and
in your Seattle bookstores, they sell it. Amazon.com is probably one of the largest in the United States now, and you can get it from them or from your local bookstores in the Seattle area. They have them.
Yeah, that's great. Well, I'll tell you, thank you very much for doing this. Thanks for your service. Thanks for all the things you've done. I mean, that's quite a life you've lived, and I really appreciate you coming on and talking, and hopefully you'll come on and talk about your new book when you get it together. And
That would be fine. Let's keep in touch. And it's a whole new generation of high school students and college students are writing me now. I get them from Australia and all throughout the world, Japan also.
Yeah, there's a lot of people interested in it. And
well, they're alert to these provocations from the weapons of mass destruction that really was used in the Mideastern War, you know.
Yeah.
That really hit the young people of this country.
Yeah. It certainly has taken their trust away, I think.
That's right, exactly. You've got that. Their trust was hurt.
Yeah, it's too bad.
But this is what happened.
Well, sir, thank you very much.
Well, I hope I answered all the questions. It's a complicated to understand all this and radio frequencies and all that and breaking codes, but I hope that they're at least alert to it. Your listeners are at least alert.
I think so. I think we took it down to the basics and kind of got basic questions, and I think that'll, if anything, it'll make them want to read the book.
Well, I have many of these documents, including the McCollum Overt Act of War Plan, is reprinted in my book, and they'll get a huge interest in that.
Whatever happened to McCollum?
Well, he died of old age, but he after Pearl Harbor, he was sent to MacArthur's Navy, which is called the Seventh Fleet, and he was intelligence officer for MacArthur, who withheld all this information, and so McCollum was really a MacArthur man rather than a Navy man.
Yeah.
The Navy didn't get along with MacArthur.
No. He was pretty independent, I guess, in his thought.
Well, that's right. I think he was keeping it. He knew the secret, and he was keeping it.
Yeah.
But so did Admiral Kimball and General Short. And they took the blame. They fell on their swords. They were trying to protect the fact that we had broken the Japanese naval code, and that's how we were able to win the Battle of Midway, which knocked out Japan from the war.
And I always wondered why they let the leader of Japan continue after the surrender.
Emperor Hirohito?
Yeah.
Well, because he controlled the Japanese people, revered him as a god. You see, he was a god leader. So he controlled them, and he made it easy for them to accept the surrender. And also, they did not want another atom bomb dropped on them. General MacArthur, who was the Allied leader during the Japanese occupation, got along just fine with Hirohito, and the Japanese people listened to Hirohito. There was no secret bombing plots and that type of thing in Japan. They went along with the surrender.
Well, I guess that was a good thing then. Yeah. Well, sir, thank you very much for the conversation and the interview.
Very good. I thank you for your insight.
To find out more about our show, guests, or to listen to past shows from our archive, please go to www.houseofmysteryradio.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.